Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this free podcast from Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and like and listen to your podcast wherever you pick up your podcast feed. You can also subscribe at theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where you will get email notification of new content as soon as it is out. And you can subscribe for free. There'll be plenty of free content, articles and podcasts. But also, you can pay a small subscription and you'll get extra special content. Anyway, enough of me. On to today's free podcast. Joined now by Andrew Smith to talk about Sunday's game. He is a fairer man than me in some of the stuff we're going to talk about, and I think I'm fairly reasonable about sorts of things, so maybe he's not fair, maybe he's unfair. We'll find out. We'll get to it.
Maybe he's a fifth columnist. That's what I used to get in the Celtic. He comes from that call. He's a fifth columnist. The things I've been called. You hadn't been on it. You can imagine some of the things that I've written and some of the lines I've taken.
Because if you're not for us, you're against us, Andrew. Have you not worked that out yet?
Oh, you know, I even got it when I was at the Celtic View. Because do you remember the famous game where Rangers kicked off and there was only three players in Celtic's half?
Yeah, that. So I was in the jungle. I was in the seated jungle for that game, and suddenly realised that I was, you know, that way in a fit of rage. I suddenly realised I was standing on the back, you know, the actual back part of the seat in front, as my brother's trying to pull me down, because I was just going crazy. That was one of those incidents where if they'd have scored in that moment, and I owned and I was a major shareholder at Celtic, I would have done, you know, that foreign club owner thing of walking down from the stands, and I would have just taken every player off the pitch.
Yeah, there would have been bedlam. If they had scored in that instant, there would have been bedlam. But, and this isn't maybe going to kind of fill people with confidence, but after that, we actually, I think it was at 90, was that 93? Would it have been 93?
It would be about then, yeah, because it was just before.
Definitely the old board.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, first press, I think I've told you before, we were kind of like, are published by a company who also did, they'd a press agency which spawned the likes of Keith Jackson, Mark Guidi, like Gordon Waddle, loads of people you would know today.
Yeah.
But they
so not they a good had, track record then.
Steady.
You throw them up now.
Friends one and all. Love
yes,
them all.
But I
know. So no. But so they obviously like good connections with photographers and everybody. But I actually think it might have been our own picture, but we actually had a picture of the, I don't know why. It was probably, we're still taking pictures of the players celebrating. But this, an incredible picture where it showed there was only three players in the Celtic half and the Rangers just about to kick off. And I thought, that's a good picture. I might use that. Like Steve Sampson, who was Mr. Tabloid, and he was the guy who owned the company. He was like Kelvin McKenzie. Mm-hmm. He says, that's the front page. It's the front page. Say, what happened next? You know, big seven. I say, no, let's not be classless. Let's just move on. The game's gone by the time the view comes out on Wednesday. No. I said, look, directors would never agree to that anyway. We don't want to start shit stirring this way. So they went over my head, took it to the directors. They said, they were enthralled by it, right? Not only did they don't have objections to it, they went, oh, you know, when can we see it? So that was the front page. You know, and on reflection, it was a great front page. It was,
I was
a great front
see.
Page.
You're the journalist. Surely from the journalist perspective, that absolutely is the front page picture.
It's just, I never wanted us to be ghettoised, which I think some happens sometimes now with like Catholicism and how we're treated in the west of Scotland and such like. But I just didn't want that. I wanted us to rise above it. You know, like, Michelle Obama, when they go low, we go high. It doesn't really work in Celtic Rangers, does it? It doesn't really work in that environment.
No.
I'm in the wrong movie.
Yes. When they go low, we laugh at them going low. And then when we go low, we do say it's from a position of moral superiority. That's how it works.
That's it in a nutshell.
So before we get on to, because apparently there was only one decision in the game of any merit, of any note, and apparently a penalty is worth 6 goals in Scottish football. So Rangers would have won the game in 9-3 if they'd got a penalty.
For what it's worth, and I know you can't say, we don't know the sliding doors moments and all that, we don't know, but I'm convinced if Rangers had scored that penalty, Celtic would equalise the game. Absolutely convinced. Because if you think about it, the two teams were running out of steam.
Yep.
So what happens is, Rangers, if they've got something to hold, we saw it even when they had something to hold earlier on, they just start to drop back and drop deeper. So if Celtic have got that ability to take the ball to the final third, you know they'll find a way to cut through them. Also, Celtic would have got a second win because they think, you're not tired when you're thinking, I've got to do something. The tiredness, I know it for like 35 years working on it, there's no way I can write 1,000 words, you know, you've got a lot of game. I've got to. You know, look at that kind of adrenaline. Celtic, that was almost destined to go to penalties that game. It would have been 4-4 if Rangers scored the penalty.
Well, we'll go on to the penalty because it was 6 goals before the penalty.
Yeah, I know, sorry.
And it sort of reminds me that that game, there's an element of that game that reminds me a bit of the Cup semi-final against Aberdeen last season. That you just
the scoring
thought,
was exactly the same.
Yeah.
My boy pointed out to me, freaky that, isn't it? The scoring is exactly the same in the sense of where Celtic found themselves.
Yeah, just
1-0 down, 2-1 up, 3-2 up.
We just think we're a wee bit off it, and it's just stupid goals that we've lost, and we're just not. And that's why some of the stuff about Rangers have had 3 good weeks now, and look, they can draw with Celtic, so maybe they're back up there. I just don't see it. I just see in the same way that we drew with Aberdeen when we go to Pittodrie, Aberdeen give us a hard time. You know, we drew with Aberdeen at Celtic Park 2-2. Does that mean the teams are on a par? We are in a different league to them. But on an occasional head-to-head basis, Aberdeen can compete with us. But over the course of the season, we'll finish 20 points ahead of them.
Yep. I mean, I don't know if it still stands true, but you probably look at Rangers' record against Celtic in the last 5 years and look, probably Hibs have got a better record, Hearts have got a better record. Mm-hmm. It's actually weird how one-sided in terms of outcomes this game has been, even for Celtic being a level above, because normally rivals, you know, some mad things happen. But Celtic have been able to do a number on Rangers as easily as they can do a number on a team with a fourth of Rangers' budget. Rangers should be closer than all the rest mm-hmm. in terms of when they meet head-to-head. And they're not.
I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Is one, because it's the domestic game we pay attention to. In terms of,
I think that's what burns Aberdeen, because that's the other one. And you think of it, they get really burned by Celtic so often.
And what I mean by that isn't, I'm not meaning it as blasé as this, because I'm sure the Celtic are under Brendan Rodgers are exceptionally professional. But the principle of there must become an element when we're playing St Mirren of, well, we've played a Champions League game midweek and we're maybe not concentrating on every aspect about where, I can't even name a St Mirren player, plays on the pitch.
Mark O'Hara.
And what specifically we need to do to combat Mark O'Hara. Because we're going to go out there and play our way. Now, I'm sure we'll have an idea if they specialise in corners or set pieces. There'll be an element of we do things and try and get it right. But we will concentrate on getting it right for the Rangers game. And anyway, on that basis, the Celtic team for the game, I would imagine that would be what your expectations would be for the team before it was announced.
You asked me at Desperate Roadside in Dundee, and I said it was the same team as Zagreb,
yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I still think I would pick that team again tomorrow, even though it did show again, and much as I'm a great Greg Taylor defender and I'm a great Scales defender in the face of your lacerations of the guy, but like, you just saw it and you thought, who made big mistakes there? Big mistakes that can cost you a game that's tight against a team that, you know, not always, but they showed signs that they had that possessed enough of a threat, yeah, to capitalise on certain mistakes. Those were like European goals you've seen Celtic losing, weren't they? The Taylor pass across, and let's be honest about it, the Scales pull that might have yielded a penalty, which could have been
also
could have put a challenge.
Their 4-on-1 was a Taylor thing.
Their 4-on-1 was a Taylor as well.
And
yeah,
there was something else that Scales did other than the penalty,
there
which
was,
we'll get to.
There was, what was it? There was something.
And I can't remember where he, and you're right, and it's because I can't remember who it was listening to somebody's podcast. Just in general, they were talking about sport, and they were talking about basketball has lots and lots of points scored in it, and so because it's a high point game, it's about the individual stars. So the team with Michael Jordan in it will win.
Right.
Football is a low sport game, therefore it's about mistakes. And so therefore,
yes,
the team with the weakest individual in it will end up being the loser more often than not. So that was that's what always sticks in my head when you then, you know, people complain because I'm not having a go at Scales or Taylor specifically. I'm just identifying that to always become a better team, you're always going to have the player who's the weakest player in the team. If you always want Celtic to be better next season than last season, then if you're then identifying what changes you need to be make, you're going to be looking for who out of that 11 is the weakest player that we need to improve upon, because that brings the standard of the team up.
I don't know if I'm allowed to quote this guy, but you never remember Walter Smith's famous one after they get absolutely millered in against away at Juventus 4-1, and Del Piero, I think he must have nutmegged Alex Cleland about 5 times, and somebody asked Smith about Alex Cleland after it, and you think, oh, has he got to defend his player and all that? And his response in the post-match was, you're only as strong as your weakest link. That was, talk about throwing him under the bus.
Yeah.
Can I give him Willie Collum a lesson?
So interesting, because that you mentioned about Greg Taylor, because The Sun ran an exclusive online last night, so no doubt being the paper today. You know the industry better than me. I thought when a story was so well known amongst people that it stopped being an exclusive, they ran an exclusive that Celtic might sign Kieran Tierney.
I know. Wasn't it exclusive to you? You said it about a year ago.
The reason I say is because I thought everybody knew that Celtic were interested in signing Kieran Tierney. You know, it's been discussed so much that I didn't think it was an exclusive to be run.
I know. I said it in PLs only because I heard it. No, I also heard it from another source as well as yourself, that's no a source related to you. But so I said it in PLZ about 3 months ago, and they clipped it, and I was surprised they'd even clipped it, you know, in the sense of, like, because you say it's common parlance. We've all been talking about it. I mean, I'm as excited as hell at the prospect that it might happen.
I mean,
injury problems and all that, but
yeah.
I just feel that, like, Brendan might have a plan for, like, sometimes guys with injury problems, remember Phil O'Donnell? Phil O'Donnell, God rest his soul, but Phil O'Donnell's best years were, like, actually after probably the age of 29, in the sense that in terms of his best years for being able to not break down, because Phil's stride wasn't quite right.
Mm-hmm.
But because once you get into your late 20s, you get to know your body better.
Yeah.
I remember speaking to Sean Maloney about this as well. You know what's going to work and what's not going to work. And maybe sometimes you'll need to not be quite 100%, and other times you'll need to make sure you don't do what's going to cause you to break down which might kind of make you a more contained player in certain ways. But good players, really good players, and Kieran Tierney's a really good player. Even if he's not quite the Kieran Tierney of first spell, he's still an upgrade.
Well, and I do wonder, you know, I've seen people say, well, that'll be the end of Greg Taylor. But I wonder, actually, if we'd be going into this knowing, right, OK, the plan here is Kieran knows his body. We want Kieran Tierney for 8 Champions League games and cup finals and cup semi-finals and Rangers and Aberdeen. So we basically want him for 20 games out of whatever it is, 60, this season. So we're going to need both Greg Taylor and Kieran Tierney.
Remember Chris Sutton? Chris Sutton probably averaged about 25, maybe I'm doing him a disservice, but there was a couple of seasons he was averaging 25 games. He had these niggles and he spells out. And I remember, I can't remember if it was me or whatever, asking Martin O'Neill, you know, kind of concerned that, you know, he's missing a lot of games. He said, I'd rather have Chris Sutton in for 25 games than an average player for 50 games. He said, give me, if I get the 25, if his standing, that's fine. You know, yeah. That's the way I'd feel about Tierney. That's the way I'd feel about Tierney. And a friend was telling me, old colleague, they were looking at speeds, the highest speeds that players, like their fastest kind of sprint in all the games across the Euros. And the fastest sprint by any Scotland player was by Kieran Tierney. So we're not at the stage yet that Kieran Tierney can't turn on the afterburners, as the pundits like to say. It's just being able to, for him to know when to use that, when to kind of put himself into the red zone.
You can just imagine a Champions League qualifier and Kieran Tierney pulls up and grabs his hamstring inside the first 15 minutes and everybody puts their head in their hands.
Oh, I don't. But as you say, it's like you keep Taylor because surely you can job share. It's almost like a job share. Tierney, Taylor.
Well, that's my point.
That's what you're saying. What would be wrong with that?
I think that would be a good solution. But if we
Greg Taylor. It'd be worth his while hanging around because there's every chance instead he'll like play in half the games he plays.
Exactly. So if we get back to the game, we've got the team that you predicted as you're waiting for the man to come and fix your slash tyre. you ever wondered why people are slashing your tyre, Andrew?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you. You know what he said to me when he turned up? He says, "You do realise it's Friday the 13th." I hadn't even realised it would.
So, got the game. Although we were a goal down at half time, you know, my brother and my dad and I were discussing. I really wasn't concerned that we were going to score in the second half. I thought we were the better team without really creating anything, that their system looked to me like their strategy was to try and stop us playing. So very similar to what Bruges did. They had one person man marking McGregor, but somebody else also very close to McGregor, so that they actually had two people close to McGregor all the time. And then they just capitalised on a mistake. That, you know, let's stop Celtic playing. Don't let them create anything down the wings. Don't let them use Callum McGregor as they do. And then let's just see what comes from that. Seemed to be what their strategy was. So at halftime, we're thinking, Brendan can fix these types of things. He'll get them in at halftime, make a tactical tweak. We'll come out in the second half and we'll score a couple of goals. That's what we were saying at halftime. How did you see it?
Well, pretty similar. You just thought they won't be as kind of blunt in the second half as they were in the front. Because I think it take them 35 minutes to even get an effort on target.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I'm seeing with this Celtic team? And it's a wee bit like what happened to, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but Klopp's Geiger pressing, if you remember, at Dortmund, and they almost won the Champions League. And then the kind of players it was so almost so exhausting that there was, they just kind of came off it. And when you came off it and didn't have that same pace and didn't have that same press and didn't have that same kind of drive and kind of incision, Celtic have lost their incision, I feel, in the last month. And that's because I think these players, it's catching up them a wee bit. I think there's a kind of fatigue setting in, an element of fatigue setting in. And therefore, when Celtic aren't quite at it, you know, it's amazing how the effectiveness is really drained.
So, the second half, we get two goals in the second half. And did you think that was it? We were going to go on and win the game?
I definitely. I defy anybody that didn't, whatever the support and allegiances, I defy anybody to think that think other than when Celtic scored that third one, you thought, that's it. Rangers have had their day, they've kind of fought manfully, but no, Celtic have just done it again to them.
Because actually and what I thought was the...
21 seconds. Oh, 21 seconds.
Well, in terms of from the... In the second half when we went on to make it 2-1, I thought we just prayed. Second half, we started just more energetically. We'd been too passive in the first half. We were quite happy, trusty. In fact, it was almost like Taylor was coming, as he's inverted left-back, Taylor was coming into the middle and Trusty was going out to the left-back position. So you actually had Carter Vickers a wee bit further forward to his left was Taylor, and then back behind him, further to the left on the touchline was Trusty. And, you know, Brendan, we just assumed when, you know, Scales comes out first at half-time and is doing quite a proactive warm-up, and you're thinking, right, okay, Trusty must be injured because Scales looks like he's coming on.
Yeah.
He's not warming up with everybody else. And it was only after the game when Brendan said, yeah, I just thought we needed, you know, we were a bit too passive in the first half, and, you know, Liam Scales has played a cup final before. He's a bit more, you know, he's a bit more direct with his passing. That you thought, wow, he actually is taking Trusty off and put Scales on as an attacking move based on what he was saying.
Yeah, it was a big call, and I suppose it almost backfired on him.
Well, so we're playing with this aggressiveness and pace, and then we make it 2-1, and we revert back to the way we've been playing the first half, and I thought actually the point that once we made it 2-1, I thought they were playing with more aggression, more pace, more energy than we were playing. And so it wasn't a massive surprise when it came back to 2-2.
Mm. But I think that's like kind of be a kind of mindset thing. Think, right, they switch it, think, right, we've retrieved the situation. You know, let's just sit in it and let's just see it out. And subconsciously that maybe puts you kind of half a yard off it or whatever, like, because you're not actually... You're not driving towards something. You're just trying to ensure you retain something.
So we, as you say, we make it 3-2, and you're thinking that's it.
That's probably the only. That's maybe been a bit unfair to Danilo, but the goal to come after it. But the goals, for all it was a great game, the quality wasn't really there. The goals were just a. Mistakes, deflections.
Well, their first goals passed by Taylor that puts them through. Our first goal's a deflected shot by Taylor into the opposite corner. Our second goal, I mean, it depends which way you want to look at it. It's great pressing by Maeda.
I suppose that was a kind of.
But if you're a Rangers fan, it's dreadful play. It's awful.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, yeah. The head that and it kind of that just bounces. I don't know what they're trying to do.
I don't know.
And we're saying about how great Raskan was, and he was involved in all three goals that Rangers conceded.
and then I can't really, because it's at the other end of the park, I can't really remember Rangers' second goal, their equaliser.
That was Diamondi. No, was that the third?
The third's Diamondi.
All right, so the
second one you raised, Diamondi.
So,
and that's right. Yes,
I don't know what Engels was doing. I don't know what Engels.
Engels is really, to be fair to Engels, he's not a number six or a defender, and he's just as far too tight on him. You know, he needs to stand off him. So he's standing right. He's doing what you would do at the halfway line, because at the halfway line, and you're that close to a player, he just lays it off because he can't do anything because you're too close to him.
Yeah, yeah. But even beyond that, Hart would have saved it.
He took a deflection off Kyogo.
Kyogo did. You know, there was nothing wrong with Kyogo. He was desperately trying to just whip it away. But his touch only succeeded in just taking it Hart. Did I say Hart there?
Yeah, like Schmeichel.
Beyond Schmeichel. Yeah. If it was Hart, might know I won, you know.
But yeah,
that's been the real upgrade this season. I know, I love Joe Hart, love him to bits, love him as a guy, and it's, you know, I mean, he has a genuine Celt now and all that. But I think a big part of the Celtic's improvement this season is Schmeichel's presence.
And in the same way, I actually felt when Joe Hart came into the team, his presence was an upgrade in securing the defence.
See their European performances. Sorry, I'm not trying to digress all the time, but see Celtic's European performances. I think he's been absolutely pivotal to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because the back four trust them and all that. You know, that's why you can get kind of almost like you can get clean sheets away from home in Europe in the Champions League.
Well, so he's on a 1-year contract, and the next round of World Cup qualifiers begin the March.
Yes.
I think if Denmark pick him for those, he'll renew his contract with Celtic.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Because if they pick him for those, that means he's in their plans for going to the World Cup. And so he want to complete, I would imagine he would then want to complete that cycle and he'll stay with Celtic for another year. That's my prediction. If Schmeichel plays the next Denmark game, he'll renew his contract. He will add another year on his contract with Celtic.
Right. They're playing they're playing Portugal for the Champions League. The Nations League quarterfinals, aren't they?
Yeah. So that's my prediction on him. But so slight deflection off Kyogo gets the second goal, and then the third goal. The third goal for me is why playing out the back instead of hoofing it is such a good thing, because Schmeichel's quick, plays it to Engels. He plays it to Engels. Engels then sprint. I mean, that's why I think Engels should watch what he did in that goal and look to do it more for Celtic, because he plays it out to Engels at the edge of the box. He lays it off to Ralston, I think Ralston. It is. And then he's going up the park. And Engels is just hell for leather up the park. Ralston plays it back to Engels, who does a brilliant cut back to Kuhn.
Yeah. Who finishes really neatly. Yeah, so that was one of the few goals that was Celtic, the Celtic we've seen this season.
Yes.
That was one of the few occasions where you really, because Celtic have become one of those teams you used to see against Celtic in Europe now. It's amazing. This is progress for me, that you can see Celtic are a team like three passes, you've lost a goal to them.
Yep.
And you used to always think that was just European teams. How can they do that? We can't do that.
how can they be looking bigger than us? And our big players run slowly, and their big players run fast. You know, we had this world where short people run fast and tall people run slow. And yet we played continental teams where their tall people also ran fast.
Another touch.
Yes. Yes. Basically, decent footballers.
Exactly, yeah. In a nutshell.
That was that perfect European...
21 seconds, you know, and I watched them again yesterday morning, because I thought, well, what's happened in those 21 seconds? And I'm not really any the wiser, because... You know, just how it gets to look at the cross. It's a great cross. I think it's Diamandis cross. Is it Diamandis cross?
Oh, I don't know who, because I'm at the other end and I've not really. I've watched it back once, and my impression is, I see for that and the Diamandi goal, their second goal, both of those goals, we've sort of switched off.
Yeah, there was definitely a switch off of the 21-second thing, because how it got to that stage, and Danilo, it's a good header and he does well, but he gets between probably Ralston. Again, I'm not trying to be, but it's funny these names that come up,
Yeah.
are key moments.
I mean, we're at the other end of the park, and you're just thinking all you needed to do was just get your head switched on that when the ball comes within 20 minutes, within 20 yards rather, of our goal, just clear it. We've got 3 minutes plus injury time here, I think, by the time the play had restarted. Just get yourself in the mindset of there's an, it's like the Falklands. There's a 20-yard exclusion zone. We are just blitzing anything that's coming close to our exclusion zone.
I've heard the Rangers getting described as a lot of things, but Belgrano is that's a new one on me. FC Belgrano.
Yes, Tierney was moving away from the box at the time of the scales fell. That's why we got away with
Was
it.
it Tierney's cross, actually? That's right, wasn't it? It was
But
Tierney's cross, wasn't
I just,
it? You're right.
Tierney's getting the ball. I think it's Maeda goes to close him down, but not with the
Yeah,
same
and he just
energy.
kind of,
It's like a
oh.
half-hearted moving towards him, and then
He just steps one side of him.
it's a bit of a looping cross. It's not like the I always think crosses from that position of round about level with the 18-yard box are a bit more easier to defend because the
Well,
angle they're coming in. Yeah.
they're in there for a time, but
And from the
it was
back of
good.
the Celtic end, it's just that thing that you see when a guy's come in from behind a player, that you see the player who's had sort of thrown his hands up in the air as if, oh, nobody told me that guy was behind me, type thing.
So I think he gets between scales. It's more Ralston. He's obviously Ralston's man. Ralston's right behind him, but obviously can't get anything to kind of divert the header. But he's between scales and Ralston. So I think. So
Yeah.
again, the names are keep coming up, you know.
And the thing is, actually, see from all other aspects of defending and attacking, I actually thought Tony Ralston did really well after he came on.
He did. He
Because
did.
I just got the impression he thought his attitude seemed to be, I'm only on this park for a limited amount of time. I am going to make sure that every occasion the ball coming and it's between me and a Rangers player, I'm winning it. Whether it's going
Yeah.
forward or defending, I'm going to get that to that ball before him, and then we'll see what comes of it. I thought he did really well, and it was just that thing of.
Yeah, I suppose anybody that can happen to anybody. In fairness, it can happen to anybody. It's just unfortunate, you know, that it is these certain guys. And I imagine we'll seeing might see a bit more of. I'm slightly concerned about Johnston. Is he picking up a few knocks and kind of
But see, to
issues?
be fair to Tony Ralston, I often think about this. When people then have a go at someone, what quality of player are you expecting to be Celtic's number two right back?
I know. And he's played well for Scotland.
Yeah. He's
He's
played
put in
more
some
minutes for
great shifts.
Scotland than Celtic, I think, this season.
Yeah, it'll be pretty close. It's a bit of the Allan Hutton syndrome when he was at then he couldn't get a game for Villa for about 2 years and played every Scotland game.
So it's 3-3, and actually I thought in injury time, sorry, not in injury time, in extra time, with the exception of the penalty, which we're just going to get on to, I actually thought whilst we weren't going hell for leather for it, we had a more positive approach to extra time than they did.
Oh yeah, they actually say that in commentary at one point. They said, "Oh, like Celtic are really kind of applying the pressure here. They're just ramping it up." Because you kind of thought there wasn't really any great chances necessarily, but you kind of thought Celtic would just get there before penalties. When watching in terms of the way that the two teams are approaching it. you thought to yourself, because Celtic are pushing here in a way that Rangers aren't pushing.
And I thought, again, another player who actually thought he contributed more than the guy he replaced was I thought Adam Eder did well, has given us a ball to play up to.
He did.
And holding it up.
Yeah, because it wasn't a wee Kyogo's day, apart from the one chance he had to the front post. I think that was in the... That just before Celtic equalised. That was maybe how Celtic got the corner to equalise.
Yep.
Remember rightly. Yeah, but you didn't really see him. Didn't really see him. And he was losing the ball. I mean, it was one of McGregor's poorer Rangers games in recent times.
I've not seen the stats, but I'd like to see the stats for pass completion for Callum McGregor.
Yeah, wouldn't it be
normal? Because there seemed to be a lot of occasions where he was losing possession.
There was. And Tati was a Tati, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You were hoping for maybe a wee bit more for Bernardo, and he's getting his, that was a big chance. He's had a big chance in the last week in the sense of Zagreb, and well, he's done all right. And I don't know, it'll be him and Engels we'll probably see turn about.
I just think choosing between the two sometimes in those elite games, and I often think it's the elite games that you really notice. And this sounds a negative way of putting it. You notice the deficiencies of players. The thing for me that you really notice, who has a poor first touch? That's what you notice in the elite games. Or who has the better first touch? And I think Engels has got a better first touch than Bernardo.
He will have, yeah. Yeah, he does. I mean, Engels is... It's Neil Lennon, he possesses the minerals. He has the minerals, you know. It's just getting out of him, isn't it?
So then, shortly into the first period of extra time, simple passes played to Scales. Again, his poor first touch is what causes the problem. That at the game, I just didn't... You know, I'm down that end, corner of the south stand in the Celtic end.
Right. All right.
Because there was two incidents that the stand side linesman in extra time, well, I think
first,
it was.
No, even on the first half as well, it was dreadful decisions he was making. You thought, he's, you know, like, and then, so it was so, because I thought, well, because we were all saying, you know, I was watching with my family, none of them get tickets, but we were all saying, well, it's definitely... We don't have anything to worry about, because that guy would have been desperate to flag if he'd have thought it was a penalty.
Well, that was our attitude, because there'd been an incident earlier where it should be a throw into Celtic and he gives a foul to Rangers and he points at Engels and he does that as if you were pulling his shirt. And I'm thinking, well, I'm maybe like 20 yards behind you, mate. I have no idea what shirt tug you're talking about here. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm the same as you. I'm just thinking, if there was anything more to it, he'd have been, you know.
Yeah, because we weren't worried about VAR because of that. Uh-huh. We weren't worried about VAR because it should have been really easy, never mind whatever the VAR guys did, you know, eating their Pringles, you know what I mean, and opening up their canny Vimto or whatever, looking steady. But, you'd have thought, he'll see that. It was so close to him, and I don't think there was anybody, any sight line.
No, he was a straight line, yeah.
How can people see it either?
So, Beaton gives a foul, points to the free kick. Like you, I'm thinking, well, if it was close to inside the box, Mr. Flagg, he'd have been right there, sticking his flag out, and he's not. So, patently, Beaton must be right. VAR seemed to take just a few seconds, because, funnily enough, we were talking at the game about, there wasn't the usual, it was more like a European level of VAR checks. European level of VAR checks are nothing obvious, because the whole purpose of VAR, it's got to be a clear and obvious error. So we were coming, everything must be...
Yeah.
You know, because European checks are over like that. Domestic football, you know, you're joking that they're spending 20 minutes trying to find a reason to chop off every Celtic goal, because it seems to be ages behind it. So we were actually saying there's been no VAR checks of any length in this game. The goals, none of the goals have had an offside dubiety about them. So there you go, this one must be pretty straightforward, that it's clearly outside the box.
No.
And then the crescendo behind it.
Thought that.
Yeah.
Tierney clearly thought that. All the Rangers players thought that. The Celtic players thought that. Like, Scales talked about it straight after. And no one thought, no one even thought that, like, it's funny even for the Rangers' point of view. It was close. It was, it was obviously a lot closer than we all thought at the time. But they must be able to see how close it is. And you think, none of them even thought, just, you know, like a false appeal you get in cricket just to put a wee bit of kind of so a seed of doubt or whatever. But none of them even bothered with that.
No. And you see, I've found, for me, in the noise around this penalty has grown through the week. So that it's noisier now as we record this on a Thursday night than it was on Monday morning. That this is just a crescendo of...
Did you watch the SFA review?
I've not watched the whole bit, and I've watched a bit of it. So, a couple of things. This is my...
I can't stop watching it. It's like it's absolutely engrossing, because what a foul-up these guys have made. What a screw-up.
Well, so this is my sort of gut feel initially. This is the type of decision which sportsmen would have analysed pre-VAR and been debatable whether it was a penalty. It's only because of VAR that everybody now fully gets what is and isn't a penalty in terms of this type of incident, right? That's what I mean.
That's true.
Right? There would have been debate on Sports Scene about nobody would have known whether on the line was a penalty or not a penalty. His foot was only partly on the line. And there would have been debate about, yes, but the foul started outside the box. Now, we now all know on the line is a penalty, and it's not where the foul starts, it's where it finishes, right?
Yeah. But you heard Willie talking today, which I didn't realise. He said that it was a red herring. The foot on the line was a red herring, because it's his body and the shirt pull goes beyond the line. That's what they're judging. So they're not even judging. So his foot could have been on the line, right? His foot could have been on the line. And my understanding is then, if somehow Scales was the other side of him and pulling him away for the penalty area, it wouldn't have been a penalty, even though his foot was on the line.
Well, I don't know whether his foot on the line might have still made it a penalty. More the impression I get from what Willie Colm saying, if his foot had been just the other side of the line, but Scales is inside the box pulling him, it's a penalty.
Oh, right. Sorry. Another one that people were getting wrong was like, they're saying, he never even sent Beaton to look. Beaton would never have gone to see it, because it's like an offside decision. It's no Beaton deciding it's offside. I don't know. They actually judge. These are only subjective matters. These are matters of fact. He was either inside the box or he wasn't inside the box. But see, when you hear him, Alan Muir, saying, it's more outside.
It's like more outside than in.
Well, but he didn't actually say that than in.
It's more outside. Yes.
But that's the phrase. It's more outside than in.
Yes.
Because you don't say, it's more outside. It's always, you're waiting for it. And they think, he's even, you know what happened? It was this bizarre, I think it's a fascinating, somebody should do the psychology on those comms. Because I think it's a fascinating example of kind of groupthink. When groupthink, because Beaton says,
somebody has.
Hold on, but it's outside. And I think Connor says, 100% outside. And I think, and then Muir says, yeah. They're all backing up each other's opinion.
So, somebody has done the psychology, but not of football VAR. There's a podcast called Michael Lewis, by a guy called Michael Lewis.
Oh, yeah, right. Heard the name.
Behind the Line or something like that. His first series is all about refereeing. And it's one of his big things is, the whole concept of his series is how we question authority more, and you can see that in sport, people question referees. And one of his things is, so they brought in the equivalent of VAR in American sport, particularly basketball, to deal with people questioning the referee. But it didn't really resolve the issue. Because one of his points is, because you can't get it perfect. So what we're looking for is perfection in something that you cannot get perfect.
Yeah.
But he talks about that groupthink as a massive thing, about how the group in the room make decisions based upon what's the decision that will be acceptable to make that has the least pushback.
Yeah, well, that wasn't the one they made. But there's that confirmation bias as well, like, because Beaton's initially saying, it's almost like, that's a pool, I've seen it all, that's a pool and it was outside, like, tell me I've got it right, tell me mm-hmm. I've got it right. And so then Connor and Muir, like, aye, you've got it right, kind of, like, they're wanting to back up his opinion, because when Willie Collum says, they're asking the closed question, you know, it's outside, eh? No, what they should say, what do you see there?
Yes.
Do you see outside or inside?
But I don't think it's unfair for the referee to say, I've given a foul because I see this, you know, in terms of not as slowly as this because he's running about and he's talking fast, but I don't think it's unfair for the referee to say, I've given a foul because I've seen the shirt pull and it looks to me like it's outside the box. In terms of that slightly, that's a closed statement to some extent.
Yeah, I suppose because that's what they do, because they explain, this is what I've done.
Yes.
But it's like, well, what do you think of that? What can you see anything that would suggest I've got that wrong?
Yeah, so for me, he's making a statement of, I've just made this decision because I've seen X, Y, Z. The role of VAR, as my understanding, would be to go, that's reasonable in the evidence you've got. And the role of VAR is then to say, only, but it's clear and obvious you've made an error.
And this clear and obvious thing is, like, we heard it all about the Lager Bielka, if you remember, the kind of, that wasn't clear and obvious, the roof goal at the start of last season. Okay. But it is clear and obvious, because if it's a foul and you've not given it a foul, like, then it's clear that it's an obvious mistake. And if you've not given a penalty and you should have given a penalty, it's an obvious mistake. You know, it's such loose language.
Yeah, so the Willie Collum thing, it's a factual position. If the factual situation, and he'll know the rules better than me, if the factual situation is Scales is inside the box pulling his jersey, he's on the line, so the line comes in, but that's actually a misnomer because it's where the foul's taking place, and the foul's taking place inside the box because Scales is in the box and he pulls his jersey into the box. Well, if that's the factual situation, then it should have been a penalty.
How could Muir and Connor no see that? Because I thought maybe they hadn't looked at that angle that we saw today, but that's obviously one of their angles. And it's not just one of their angles, because I've had a go at it. They gave us a go at the VAR thing. It was fucking hopeless, I have to say, you know. But they were quite cute, because with the footage they gave us, you know, you get a big red button and a big green button, you know, mm-hmm. if you think you see something that's dodgy, big red button. But, like, so they gave us a clip for a game in Germany, and there'd been a VAR check in one penalty box. Within 2 seconds, there was another VAR check, but I was still checking to see what was happening here. Totally missed the other one. And it turned out that the VAR check at the second one, that was a penalty. But the one at the first one, you're checking away, you're missing an actual penalty.
Yeah.
And see these screens and all that? It's like Max Headroom, you know, for our younger viewers again.
Yes. One for the kids.
But, oh my God, we Celtic that even we don't try.
But, you see, I'm finding the Rangers comments on this. Maybe it's because I just believe we've had a massive amount of decisions against us over time in key games that we were told to suck it up. That I am a bit more pragmatic of, all right, okay, you're right. You should have had a penalty.
I think that's
You can't say you would have won the game because, as you've just rightly said, there was still another 28 minutes to go after that.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think that would have won the game, but then how do we? We'll never know.
Goals change games, so you can
never know.
But goals change games, so you can never ever then say if that had happened, X would have happened in the game.
I know.
Because the two sets of teams would have played differently from that point on. And as I say, I have had so many decisions. I have seen so many decisions. You know, most obvious one that, you know, people I've seen people throw up is the John Hartson onside by the length of a car that was given offside in a League Cup final against Rangers.
Yeah, I know. I saw people bring that up, but hey, guys, newsflash. That was 21 years ago.
No, the point I'm making to that...
21 years ago? Is that what we were just doing? We used to mock Rangers for like bringing up the Roy Aitken throw-in.
Yes.
Aye. They brought it up for about 20 years.
Yeah, I'm only using that as an example of, I was told to suck it up at the time. I was told to suck that up. So do you know what, Rangers? Suck it up.
Yeah. I've spoken to John Hartson about it and he refuses to suck it up. He's still bitter. And I'm still bitter too. You're allowed still to be bitter for... You know what I'm still bitter about? Fashion Sakala putting his foot down in Starfelt's leg, and Starfelt slides along to stop him, as a defender should do, as Cammy Carter-Vickers did in the 4-1 thing. He slid in because he was expecting... to kind of cross the ball, so he was blocking any potential cross. And old-fashioned Scala does was he put his foot on Starfelt's leg. Do you remember at Ibrox?
Mm-hmm.
So his foot came away from him. They got a penalty. It's the most, and nobody said anything about it at the time. It's the most. That was the same day as the old kind of basketball.
I mean, obviously, there's the famous Stephen Mahé at Ibrox one. Where Kanchelskis gets out a shotgun and blows his head off and play on. And then there's the Neil Lennon one. But the one that always got me was, remember Paul Lambert busted open Albert's mouth?
Yeah, that used to get to me as well. Like he broke Albert's broke his jaw, aye.
Yeah, so by the very fact that the connection was Albert's face on his knee means that it was... sorry, means... that it wasn't.
Did endanger an opponent? I know. Did endanger an opponent no existent? The phrase no existent.
You know. So that's why I'm a bit right. Do you know what? Humans make mistakes. I actually think from the brief bit, I've not watched the full bit of the VAR because we're trying to organise this quickly because I need to go in about 12 minutes. The bit I think from the bit I've watched. Willie Collum's a bad boss.
He's
because he chucks his staff under the
bus. He's thrown them under a fleet of buses.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about this with, I was talking about this with some of my old crew, and they were saying, where did the SFA go for here? This was always my, and I always understood how the referees didn't want to come out and explain decisions. Always understood that. Because nobody would ask them, how did you manage to see that was actually... Like he'd killed him when your sight, you know, there was no clear sight line for you and you saw exactly what happened. Nobody asked him, nobody's got to say that. That was a marvellous piece of refereeing. How did you manage to pull it off? That was never going to be the question.
No. I mean, from a guy who gave a penalty to Rangers with his back turned to it.
Yeah.
With, what's his face, Mastorovic and...
That's what I would be thinking if it was Alan Muir and like Frank Connor. All right, we right royally screwed up. And I know for a fact, just because I've got sources kind of thing, like how upset Beaton is, because he feels let down by the two of them. And I don't blame him for feeling let down by the two.
But if you're Willie Collum, you say, I've no issue with John Beaton's decision. It's fast moving in the pitch. You can see it's difficult to judge where he is. The shirt pull's not as obvious where Scales is in that position, and he can't see Tierney's foot in the line. So he's going to go to VAR for that. The VAR guys... We've got to do some training. But don't forget, these guys are in a stressful situation. Humans make mistakes. It's a high-pressure game. It's been a really, you know, 6 goals have been scored in this game. I'm not defending that people shouldn't, that made the mistake. I'm just explaining that mistakes can be made. And so we've identified there's a training issue needed here. Yeah. Move on. This looks to what I heard tonight was, dear Rangers, I'm sorry, you're right. You know, diving headers count as double. You should have, and all that nonsense, you should have got a goal here. You should have won the cup. It's all, and it's their fault. And we are, that's what I'm hearing.
No, I don't know where you're hearing that. Like, I just think it's like, you know, this kind of, you kind of, too much transparency. It sounds a bit like Spinal Tap.
No, but what I mean by that is when I'm hearing that, I'm hearing he shouldn't be going over the top.
Accept mistakes have been made.
Apologise the mistakes have been made. Say the guy is, you know, the guys haven't intended to make a mistake. Don't chuck fuel in the fire to say these guys are assholes. I don't know what they're playing at, which is more or less what he said.
It's also significant, perhaps, that it came in extra time, in the sense of, you know, so that they're going beyond what they normally do in the terms. Because the amount of concentration, even when we were doing it for a couple of minutes, it was honestly, I had a headache just we sitting there a couple of minutes. And the six tellies and all that, and the big buttons and everything, you know.
And actually, like, see, when I've watched it, because they've got both incidents on the screen at the same time. They've got the foul.
It's a head wrecker.
And see, myself, as I'm watching it, because I'm looking to see, is there any foul by Tierney as well? That's what I'm looking for. Are they both pulling shirts? That's what I'm looking for. Which is on the right-hand screen, at the point that the left-hand screen is showing that Scales is in the box. Then... I'm a bit like you. Then I'm seeing, right, it's not obvious that they're both at it here. I look back across the left-hand screen, and by that point, that image is finished. But I didn't quite get a full image of the first one, so when they go back to replay, I'm looking again at the right. The point I'm making
is... You almost need a person for every camera.
Yes.
You almost need a person for every camera. And that's just no... you can't bring that in any kind of budget. Can you imagine if you had like another six officials at every single game that VAR's in?
Anyway, I need to be going in 5 minutes, so do you know what? I accept they should have had a penalty. I think Willie Collum's comments, I think it's poor media management, the way he's then gone out and said what he said. He's chucked these guys under the bus, and I don't think that's the right way to
do it. Will we ever see them again? You know, there was one great tweet quickly, if we thought we saw bad decisions on Sunday, apparently, at the Air United Falkirk game, crazy, you know, sending off, later rescinded by David Dickinson. David Dickinson, who is bouncing from having made all these crazy decisions to Tannadice Sunday, where Dundee United will play Celtic for the first time. Will play a Brendan Rodgers Celtic for the first time ever. Brendan Rodgers has never faced Dundee United.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well,
just because having that terrible time of it, in the sense of, you know, like.
So we then go on and we win the penalties. I thought all of our penalties were excellent, all of them.
Tremendous, and obviously you've spoken about them in your other podcast.
Yeah, right? And Schmeichel, he's got a winning. You see, 25% save ratio for penalties.
Jeez, that's a...
In his whole career. So, actually, him saving that penalty, he was sticking with his ratio of penalty saves.
It's funny, it was down at the same side that Hart saved his penalty in the semi-final, wasn't it?
I mean...
I know it wasn't exactly the same because Hart had missed his, but...
But it was a great save. It's a really good save because it's full stretch. It's not like it was a... You know, when I first listened back to Radio Scotland, their first description of it was, and it's a poor penalty. And I'm thinking,
wasn't it a poor penalty? See the way he gets that kind of real kind of claw on it, that, you know, like he almost kind of scoops his hand round it. And I'll tell you, it was a great save he made for the Diamandi.
That's an incredible save. That, you know, if I'm talking about the big incidents of the game that have been diminished by that penalty chat, two Schmeichel saves. They are fantastic parts of the game. His Diamandi one is just an incredible save that's hardly being mentioned because he then makes the penalty save that him and obviously Maeda, him scoring the penalty, wins the cup. But those two elements are just fantastic, incredible.
It's great I think Matthew Fahir, did a piece for another website about all Celtic shootouts. Are they ever won? Like, you know, they're actually, this is their best run in terms of penalty shootouts since they've ever been taking penalty shootouts.
Well, so beating Rangers, we beat Aberdeen, beat Dundee United, when Boric scored the penalty.
That crazy shootout.
There was the
Well, I suppose they lost the 2016. Like, was that the last penalty shootout before the Aberdeen one? Was 2016?
Might be. We lost a penalty shootout to Valencia, in 2002.
Yeah, Larsson missed six penalties for Celtic.
In the same, it gets back to Gaël Jourdet pointing out that actually elite players have a poorer conversion rate on penalties than average players.
Yeah.
It's
been brilliant to watch them winning two penalty shootouts in the calendar
and then
year.
When we qualified for the Champions League under Strachan,
yeah,
they were all brilliant penalties that night. They were all fantastic. Every penalty was top quality, slashed into the corner, or smashed into the corner, I should say.
I'd half a mind that Hatate might miss. You know, like people saying the new when Yilmaz come up.
Mm-hmm.
I must say, I had a similar kind of. I could just. And I was, see the relief. He thought that he could miss. Because we've seen all these guys. We've seen Hatate, we've seen McGregor, we've seen Ida, we've seen them all missing penalties for Celtic. No, in the distant mists of time, you know.
To be fair, Ida's penalty miss was. There'd been a huge delay because I was at Tynecastle. And was it the post he hit? Did he hit the post?
Did he hit the post?
Inside the post and cannoned out, yeah. Because I don't think Gordon saved it. No, it was Clark that was in goals. It was Clark that was in goals. Anyway, we've secured the cup. We've got the game against Dundee United on Saturday.
21 out of the last 25 trophies, isn't it?
It's amazing.
It's astonishing. Soak it up, anybody who's watching this as Celtic sport. It's a pity the younger ones are only watching this because we have to keep reiterating. It's not always like this, as I have to keep reiterating. My teenager and you might be required to do the same. It's not always like this.
No,
it can't
it's not.
always be like this. It feels like it might be like this for quite a long time, but.
Yes, so quick prediction for the Dundee United score on Sunday.
You know, I think it might be a struggle.
I think it might be partly because they've just been, you know, they were out bevying until Wednesday.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised at 1-1 or something.
Well,
I hope I'm well wrong.
Anyway, with that, I will say, Andrew Smith, thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Brian.
Bring me sunshine. Your smile. We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground, rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine.